Are the New Testament Gospels reliable historical documents? How can a loving God allow evil in the world? You'll find answers to these questions in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Making the Case for Christianity, Responding to Modern Objections. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Making the Case for Christianity.
Once there was a man who went searching for the true age of the earth. In his struggles to discover it, he stumbled on a grave threat. Beautiful spring day, Pasadena, California, 1966. Business is booming, life's good. Except for one man. A geochemist named Claire Patterson, known as Pat. He knows that everyone he sees is in danger from an invisible menace. And he's determined to put a stop to it, no matter what the cost.
That's an excerpt from Episode 7 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. This program has been covering a lot of bases. It has been covering a lot of ground in the course of the episodes so far. We didn't have an opportunity last week to do an interview and a review of Episode 6. So today on Issues Etc., this Tuesday afternoon, April the 22nd, we're going to review Episode 6 and 7 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey with Dr. Danny Faulkner. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Tuesday afternoon. After our conversation with Dr. Faulkner, we will spend some time with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute, talking about two things that are actually related in the news, a Canadian study on children of same-sex couples and gay marriage in Michigan. Then we'll talk about the first human clones from adult cells. This is actually a first, and it is a dangerous threshold that has been crossed. Our guest, Wesley Smith, in the last 15 minutes of the program, says, look, he warned us that when Dolly the sheep was cloned, it was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of perfecting the technique before human cloning would be possible and would be practiced. And in this case, the product of human cloning called a cloned embryo, that's what they're calling it, is going to be used to harvest tissue. Joining us to talk about Episode 6 and 7 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, a regular guest now, Dr. Danny Faulkner. He holds a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
Is there a little sleight of hand going on occasionally, maybe even more than occasionally, in Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey? I'm thinking about Episode 6, last week's episode, where a discussion of the constituents of matter from atoms to molecules suddenly became a discussion of the evolution of life, as though it just naturally leads that direction.
That's not a little sleight of hand. That's a huge sleight of hand. you've got 400 years of biology telling us that molecules just don't organize themselves into living things. So that's a huge jump. It's assumed to be the case, but never been demonstrated. In fact, it's quite unscientific to say that such things happen.
So how would you evaluate Episode 6 in terms of the basic science, the basic things that have been knowledge that has been gained, observations that have been made, and conclusions that have been drawn on the basis of repeated observation experimentation? How would you evaluate Episode 6 of Cosmos?
Very poorly. Like I said, it's just really, it's a guess masquerading as science. It really fails all the way around as far as I'm concerned.
So specifically, what earns the poor grade with you in Episode 6?
Well, life just doesn't come about. Molecules don't organize themselves into life. You don't find real clear evidence today of things evolving from one type into a totally different type of organism, which is required by, molecules to man sort of evolution. And this has never been demonstrated. Most scientists believe it happened, But that doesn't make it true. It just simply that's what they have forced themselves to think about and believe. But it, as I said, it's a sleight of hand. You've jumped from this basic elements of the atoms to this wonderful evolution that supposedly took place, but never been demonstrated. And I just it really is going off the tracks as far as observational science is concerned, as I see it.
Aren't there really two problems when you say, like, molecules to man, when that is simply assumed? The first problem being the one you mentioned before, inanimate matter to life. And the second problem being, once life has kickstarted itself, I mean, that's how else are you going to put it, then from one kind of life to another kind of life?
Yeah, those are two basic steps. A lot of evolutionists like to separate those two, and that's fine, but that gives you two huge problems. You know, one I think clearly is impossible, and I think we can make a very strong argument in any number of ways against that. And then the second one about simple things evolving into more complex, leading up to organisms such as human beings, that's never been demonstrated either. It's been inferred, it's been insisted upon, but it's not been observed. It's not observable science, so it's a, at best a guess.
It seems kind of a convenient thing for the producers of Cosmos and the scientific community that go along with that assumption about the origins of life, that it happened so long ago, they can simply assert it must have happened because we're here. If it hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here to talk about it. That seems a rather convenient way of discussing this, the situation, and relieving them, apparently. No one feels the need to explain how it actually occurred or to demonstrate that it can occur.
You've said that very well. It's just the alternative, or any alternative to that, is unthinkable. The fact that there is a creator, the fact that he's made us, is entirely out of bounds for them to even consider. I mean, it ought to be at least a logical possibility, if not a scientific possibility in their estimation. But so many scientists today just take the opinion that the natural world is all that there is, and physical world is all that there is. And so if we're here, then we must have come about through a purely natural, purely physical process. And they won't even consider any other possibility. It's ruled out of bounds from the very beginning. And that's not the way science used to be done. For much of the history of modern science, going back four centuries, the consideration of God certainly was a major part of all of that. Sir Isaac Newton, who literally wrote the book on physics, I've said before, certainly was of the opinion that there was a creator, and he even thought that the creator ought to be considered in a legitimate discussion of science.
For all intents and purposes, has the, at the very least, the kind of the popular face of science that we see in Cosmos and best-selling books, things like that, has it basically shrugged off the burden of proof when it comes to the origin of life, just saying, look, we don't know how, but it must be?
Yeah, that's it. It's simply an assertion that life must have happened, or else we wouldn't be here. And they feel actually no real compulsion to be able to demonstrate that. They can't even. They just simply push it off way off into the distance and say, well, that's something we haven't yet figured out. Maybe if somebody will do that. I sometimes refer to this as evolution of the gaps. We've got this huge gap here, and we'll eventually fill in that knowledge, but it must have happened in some material way, even though we haven't a clue how it might have happened. And it's an assertion, masquerading as science. You know, everyone seems to think that's what science says, but it's merely what a bunch of scientists have said, and that's very different from what the facts of science are.
How did Episode 6 do in terms of the history of science? They delve into this each time, and I think they were among the ancient Greeks for Episode 6. How do you think they did?
Well, they did okay on that, but I've always been very suspicious from the very first episode and the way they've handled things. There were two facts that were presented in dealing with astronomy that I just kind of bolted out of my chair because I don't know where they got this. One of them was they said that the temperature of the core of the sun was 10 million Kelvin, and that's not quite right. It's more like 15 or more million Kelvin. They're off by 50% on that one. So I was puzzled by that one. Another one they gave, the length of time that it takes for the energy generated in the core of the sun to make its way out and into the Earth. And they said it took 10 million years. And, boy, I've never heard that figure. I've heard thousands of years. I went looking out there to see if I could find any fact that anybody had estimated 10 million years. And what I found was the most commonly quoted one was from a calculation about 20 years ago of about 170,000 years, quite a bit less than the 10 million. And I'm just really puzzled. You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson is a well-respected astronomer. This is the sort of stuff he ought to have learned in undergrad days. And you've got script writers for this show. You do multiple takes. It's not a simple misstatement, you know, that you could have made. I'm sure that this script has been gone over, but I think the people in this program, this series, are being ill-served by some of the researchers and writers. They're just making all these little mistakes in scientific fact and historical fact of science that I find very disturbing. With a number of people going over this, you'd think somebody would have picked these simple mistakes up.
We're reviewing episodes 6 and 7 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey on this Tuesday afternoon, April the 22nd, with Dr. Danny Faulkner, Professor of Astronomy for Answers in Genesis.
Christianity has so much influence our culture that we take it for granted and think it was always that way.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you move into one of the Mideastern countries where primarily the theology of Islam operates, you can see the influence of what Christianity has had in our culture. Yet we tend not really quite to, how shall I say, realize it and appreciate it. And once in a while, we need to be reminded.
You can meet and hear Dr. Alvin Schmidt making the case for Christianity's positive impact on civilization June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday afternoon. We are reviewing episodes 6 and 7 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey with Dr. Danny Faulkner. He holds a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University. He's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Episode 7 dealt largely with the age of the Earth. How did they do on Cosmos, treating that particular subject?
Well, it's supposed to be about the age of the Earth, but they seem to spend most of their time on environmentalism. I was just a little puzzled by that one. They told a nice story about Claire Patterson, the guy who was involved in developing the uranium lead method of dating back 60 years ago now. But you know, the original Cosmos series kind of was billed as being a personal journey. And kind of Carl Sagan's personal take on the universe and on the world. This one isn't quite billed that way, but it's kind of in that same spirit. They use some astronomy topics to then kind of launch into all sorts of other directions. You know, episode 6 had a lot of biology in it and very little astronomy. This one had a little bit of astronomy, but then a lot of other things that they went into, again, given the story of Claire Patterson with this lead in the environment, one of the leaders on that, and leading up to banning of lead in a lot of products. I kept asking myself while this was going on, what's this got to do with astronomy? It was an interesting story, and I think they got most of the story on that reasonably correct. But what does it have to do with astronomy? You know, I remember back years ago, people were using, teachers were using the Cosmos original series in their classroom teaching about astronomy, and I just don't see that you could get much out of that in this particular episode.
So what did they conclude, and how did they reach the conclusions they did regarding the age of the Earth? What's the model that prevails today among scientists to accept the essentially the evolutionary model of both the cosmos and of life?
Okay, well, you have the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago. You have more recently, last 4.5 billion years, the solar system formed. And trying to get the age of the Earth, that's tricky. In the episode last night, the night before last, Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about looking at layers of rocks and getting the dates from the layers that you have there. But it really doesn't give you the actual age. And so they went to radiometric dating methods, and they developed this uranium-lead method. And they even didn't even get the age of the Earth from rocks on the Earth. They got it from the age of meteorites. These are supposedly fragments left over from the origin of the solar system. The reason why you can't use Earth rocks, supposedly, is because the Earth has been churned around so much, and rocks have been ground down and heated and restarted and remade to the point that you can't get back to original rocks. But meteorites are supposedly original fragments. There's a whole bunch of assuming going on here. You've got your theory of how the solar system formed. You've got the theory of the history of the Earth. You've got a whole slew of assumptions made about radiometric dating. And most people watching a presentation like this have no idea the number of assumptions being made in this.
How much is this series benefiting? We've talked about this a little bit before, but benefiting from kind of good, what should we say? I don't want to say good art. Artists' depictions, dramatizations, I think is what they used to call them. This isn't the actual events, but we're going to kind of show you in a fanciful way how it must have happened. You know, pictures of glowing accretion disks where planets are kind of condensing out of clouds of, well, gas and other debris. How much is it benefiting from that?
Almost entirely. You've got a lot of scenarios, a lot of simulations and such, and animations going on. But again, if you watch this, it's very easy to assume that this has all been proven, all been put together. But it's almost entirely dependent upon that sort of thing.
I know that our view is extremely limited in terms of astronomy. We can see only so much, and most of it is so distant we can't really see it, but we can infer things like planets around other stars and things like that. We can infer it from, you know, the dimming of the light and all of that kind of thing. Well, have there ever been, should we be able in some way to, if this is an ongoing process, stars are living and dying, solar systems, I presume, are coming into existence and being obliterated by the self-destruction of their own star. Shouldn't we be able to be looking for and finding solar systems, early solar systems, in the process of forming their planets in their orbits?
Oh, there are claims that sort of thing has been done, but I'm not impressed by them. Usually they find evidence of a disk of dust around a star, and they say, well, this is evidence of a forming solar system. Well, no, it's just a dust disk. How do you get from that to planets? They have this idea that the dust starts sticking together, by the way, by a mechanism they don't yet understand, and then those little particles begin to grow larger and larger into planets. You saw the neat little video showing how this happened, but they've left out a huge amount of details. The process really is not understood. As far as seeing them around other stars, this process supposedly takes a very long period of time, millions of years in many cases. So the likelihood of you being able to sit there and watch all this time and see it take place is nil. These things are far away. Many times they're shrouded in gas and so forth. So No, you really can't observe these things. It's not strict observational science. A lot of interpretation given to it.
Is part of the problem, I mean, it's not just the problem of the formation of solar systems, but of solar bodies themselves, too. Isn't exactly the same as yet unobservable, unexplainable process said to account for the formation of stars?
Yep, that's not observed either. There are claims that they've seen stars forming, but really what they see are more or less snapshots of various stages of a very long process. Again, many times millions of years, far longer than we've been watching or could ever watch, really.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, what we're trying to do here, and we've discussed this a bit, we're trying to popularize science, we're trying to explain to people who don't have degrees and who want to understand this thing, all these matters. We'll try to explain it to them in a way that they can understand. So we're going to have to simplify, and quite frankly, we're going to have to skip some steps and fill in some gaps. How do you respond to that explanation for what people may be seeing on Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey?
Well, I do the same thing from time to time. You've got a lot of stuff that goes into the work you do, and then trying to present it to a general audience, you do have to simplify it. But sometimes you make it too simple, and you gloss over certain details, and you're so confident of things that that you really present assumptions and without realizing that you're presenting assumptions. And I think that's a real problem that all of us have. But I think we're seeing here more of a worldview, far far more than science coming across.
When someone says, "Look, we're going to have to skip steps," would you be satisfied if Cosmos, the producer of Cosmos, simply said, "Guess what, folks? We're skipping some steps here, and we're going to admit that to you, and we're filling in some gaps here, and we're going to admit that to you." Would that be better?
That would be better. And also saying we think this, or scientists generally think that, I have no quarrel with that, because that would be a true statement. They think that. But the way it's presented, it's presented as absolute fact. It's been demonstrated without any kind of doubts, and nothing could be farther from the truth.
Dr. Danny Faulkner holds a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. You can find out more about Answers in Genesis. Find a link at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Faulkner, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. The first human clones have been developed from adult cells, two of them, one from a 35-year-old man, the other from a 75-year-old man, I believe. Wesley Smith is a little bit concerned, I should say. We're going to be spending some time in just a few minutes with Dr. Jennifer Obeck Morse of the Ruth Institute, talking about a Canadian study on children of same-sex couples and gay marriage in Michigan. We'll find out how those two stories, how that research and the case of gay marriage in Michigan come together with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute right after this.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter sermon and a sermon on the prophet Job preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of two of Todd's sermons.
This is Pastor Jeff Siegel of St. Mary Evangelical Lutheran Church in Des Moines, Iowa, where God gathers us around His means and grace to offer us forgiveness, life, and salvation. Whether you are looking for a church or just visiting Des Moines, if you like Issues Etc., St. Mary's is the church for you. Join us as we gather together every Sunday to continue the Reformation tradition of Christ-centered, cross-focused worship, preaching, and teaching. For more information, go to www.stmarylutheran.org. Remember to spell out saint.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received Him, who believed in His name, the Gospel of John says, He gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, You'll get a good Christ Crucified For You Lutheran Youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Every week, Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout cooks up 29,000 pieces of chicken, 980 gallons of meat sauce, 310 loaves of fresh bread, and 200 fresh pies and cakes. Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout in Granite City, Collinsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. Ravinelli's.com. Ravanellis.com. Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout.